person who's behind the Myron Kalman sheets every week is a fellow in the yeshiva by the name of Yosef Nishinsky, who usually does not get the call from me with a list of Myron Kalman until well after midnight on Saturday night. And he then has to break into the yeshiva's office. And as only the students in the yeshiva know how to do it. And make the Myron Kalman. So he definitely put a great deal of time and effort into this. I was hoping he would come take a bow, but I guess he's too modest. I would like to thank Rav Harvey for everything that he's done to make this possible, for his constant encouragement and his promotional efforts going around and encouraging everyone to come. And certainly without him there would not be a shir. So I'd like to give him a major, major yesher tov. And I think everybody understands that he is the man behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. It was mentioned previously, but I would like to also thank a person who's serious nefesh very greatly is responsible for this year, and that is my wife, who, even though she's not here, but I will tell you that for 29 Saturday nights this year, and the total of 53 over the last 2 years, she did not have a husband. And that is because I was sequestered in a small study with the staff of Svarim every month of Shabbos trying to pull things together. And the two of my children here could vouch for that. And the fact is that this is an enormous mysterious nefesh when you have a busy schedule. So as we all know, Saturday night is the time that people often have a little family time. And that was sacrificed for the sake of Limud HaTorah. And she definitely deserves an enormous yasher kovach in serious nefesh that only the Ribono Shel Olam knows. Finally, I would like to thank everyone for coming. And Chazal say that Miyom Shacharit Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara tells us, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Eimo LaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo Ela Dal Am Shel Halacha Bilvad. Chazal say that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so God had no place in the world that he could call home. There is no place. The Beis HaMikdash was the ma'on, the dwelling, so to speak, of the Shekhinah, the Ashrach HaShekhinah. And when that was taken away, so there was nothing, it would seem there was nothing left. And the Chazal say, the Gemara tells us in the Shrach that in reality, there still is a place. So you look at the world and you drive around and you go different places and you say, where would God feel comfortable? Not in this street, not in this place, not in this building, but in a place where people come together to learn. In the Dal Lama Shel Halacha, that is the one vestige that we have left. And therefore, till the Bias HaMashiach, Klal Yisrael has kept itself going, connecting with Ribono Shel Olam through Tefillah, but also tremendously through Torah, through Limud Torah. And therefore, everyone coming together to learn, it's a Talmud Torah, the Rabbim is a tremendous thing, is a remarkable experience, and certainly this is a place where people come to learn. It's a place where Hashem feels comfortable, that Shrosh HaShekhinah comes to such a place. So this is really, in that sense, I'd like to give the yasher kovach to everyone for coming throughout the year and last year as well. And certainly, this year requires mesiras nefesh for everyone to come. When I first heard about the idea of having a shir on a Sunday morning at 8:30 in the morning or 8:45, I said, who's going to come to such a shir? I mean, people like sleeping. All the shuls have later minyan on Sunday. And it's a tribute to everyone who has come all throughout the time to come to learn, to start off the week with Divrei Torah. So a big yasher kovach to everybody for coming and for making it possible. And Be'ez Hashem, we look forward to bigger and better things down the road. Okay, so in a first, I have never done this before. Usually I try every Sunday to have a shir that has some connection either to the parsha or to the Nyana Dioma or to the season that we're in. And I never continue the shir from 1 week to the next. However, last week after the shir ended, I was I got some immediate feedback from different people that suggested that maybe there are more opinions than the one that I presented. So I would like to continue what we spoke about last week in terms of machlokas and what you can do in a shul and what you cannot do, and to see perhaps there are other opinions. And lest one think that we're totally breaking with tradition, it could be connected to Parshas Chukas also, because of the fact that we read in yesterday's Parsha about the feast of Aaron, and Aaron HaKohen was renowned. So it says, Vayivku also called Eis Yisrael, that everybody cried for him, all the people cried when he passed away. And that is because of the fact, as I'll say, that he was always Shalom Barodet Shalom, that he was a person who he stood out in his pursuit of peace. So therefore, the pursuit of peace is something which is one of the basic yisodos of the Klal Yisrael, so we could again tie it into this parasha. So last week we said that there are two issues involved in deviating from the practice of the shul. And they are, number one, we have the issue that there's a pasuk in the Torah that says Moses got to do. And Moses got to do, we mentioned last week, that the Gemara says in Yevamos, the Gemara says this means Lo Sasu Agudos Agudos, that a person, that Klal Yisrael should not break up into groups. You should not have people, some people following the halacha this way, and some people following the halacha that way. And presumably, to go into a shul, and for some people to do one practice of halacha, and others to do a different, would be an issue of Los Eskodism. The second factor is, we saw there's a Mishnah in the Sefer Pesachim which says, Ali Shana Odom Mifnei HaMachlokas, that a person should not deviate from the practice of the place that he's in due to Machlokas, because of the fact that it'll cause fights. It'll cause fights. This one will say, this is not the way you do it, this one will say, this is the way you do it, and it'll cause fights. So last week we went through Tshuvas written by Rav Moshe Feinstein, whose Pesach Halacha was followed by world jury and certainly American jury for so many years up till this day. And his opinion, which he makes clear in a number of places, is that when a person goes into a shul, he's supposed to follow their minhag. He's supposed to follow the minhag of the shul, and therefore he said that if a person let's say daven the Nusuch Sfar and went into a shul, they daven Ashkenaz, so then he should follow their practice, he should say the Tachanun the way they say Tachanun, the order that they say it, and the various minhagim that they follow, one should do. And his psak was, just to review, his psak was that one is allowed to hold on to his own practices if it is bitzima, if it's the type of thing that people will not notice, then you could hold on to your own practice. Whereas it's something which is going to be noticed by others, his feeling was that you have to do what the shul does. And therefore he said that, for example, things that are said out loud in the davening, like Kedusha or Kaddish, would have to be said the way the shul says it, which means that, if, like we gave the example, if you come into a shul that davens Ashkenaz, it would be wrong for a person to say V'yatzmach Rukhane V'kar V'shiche when he says Kaddish. And so too, an Ashkenaz, the person who went into a Sfarad shul, would have to say it their way. And so too would be with Kedusha, and so too, he said, Rav Moshe said, in his opinion, would even apply to the Sukkot the Zimra and the Birchus Kriya Shema. He said that in his opinion it would be preferable that even those things should be said like the shul, because of the fact that sometimes the person says those things out loud. Sometimes a person will, in order to inspire his kavana, a person will say it out loud, and therefore that too could lead to a problem if the person sitting next to you realizes that you're not saying it the same way that he does. Whereas something like the silent Shemone Esrei, so the silent Shemone Esrei, so Rav Moshe says that nobody knows what you're saying. In such a case, then you could say it your way. But anything else, he said, really should be said the way of the shul. So several points were raised after the shiur last week. One of which was which I'd like to address. One of them was, what happens if you daven in a shul which does not necessarily have a strong minhag? It doesn't have, you know, maybe as far as the tefillah is concerned, the nusach ha-tefillah, so the shul has, okay, we daven Ashkenaz and only Ashkenaz. But what about, let's say, when it comes to the question of putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, where you have situations where shuls don't have a distinct minhag? You have half the people do one way and half the people do the other way. That was one point that was raised. And the other, another point which was raised was that perhaps Rav Moshe's opinion is not the only opinion that's out there. So I did a little research, and what I came up with was as follows. And in order to appreciate this, we have to really see the Gemara that's brought on the first sheet on the Yud Daled Amud Aleph in Masechet Yevamim. And that is, the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara discusses the prohibition of Lo Sisgodedu, which again means, Lo Sisgodedu means that the Torah prohibits Jews from breaking into factions. That you should not have, like what the Gemara calls, agudos, agudos. You should not have groups and groups. Some people doing this way, some people doing that way. So the Gemara debates, the Gemara in Yevamim debates when exactly this applies and when it doesn't apply. And essentially the conclusion of the Gemara is as follows, about halfway down the page, pretty much halfway down the page, the last three words on the line, Amar Le Rava, two lines past that, Ela Amar Rava. Rava said as follows, Rava said in conclusion of this discussion, Ki Amrinan Lo Siskodidu, Rava said, when does the prohibition of Lo Siskodidu apply? That is, Kedon Bezdin Be'ir Achaz. That would be if you had a Bezdin, if there was one Bezdin in a town, and Plag Morin Kedivrei Be'Shamai, U Plag Morin Kedivrei Be'Tilo. If you had some rabbis on the Bezdin who followed the opinion of Be'Shamai, and some who followed the opinion of Be'Tilo. We know that the prototypical case of Machlokas and Klal Yisrael, Machlokas and Halacha, the Gemara tells in the Masechet Sota, the Gemara says that Machlokas and Halacha began pretty much from the time of Be'Shamai and Be'Tilo. The Gemara says that as things got closer to the Churban, probably because when things got closer to the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, there was a lot of upheaval in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, "Misharavu Talmidei Beis Shammai veTalmidei Beis Hillel Shloshim Shu Kol Tzarka," that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had students who did not spend the proper time. They did not spend enough time serving their Rebbe, meaning that they did not spend enough time getting to the bottom of what their Rebbeim held, and therefore, probably due to what was going on in the world around them. So at that time, the Gemara says, Rabu Machlokas B'Yisrael. The Gemara, that's really when everything started to break into Machlokas. In other words, till that time, there wasn't a lack of clarity because a person would stay by the Rebbe and they would sit and they would make sure they understood 100% and the various Gedolim could get together and sit down and speak things over. But at the time of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that's when things began to break apart. So the classical situation, who do you pass like? Do you pass like Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel? Says the Gemara that if you had a Bezdin in one town, you had one Bezdin, and some of the rabbis on the Bezdin followed the opinion of Beis Shammai and some Beis Hillel, that would be a problem of Lo Siskodedu. Because that means that nothing is accepted. There's nothing accepted. Even within the one Bezdin, there is dispute. However, says the Gemara, Avo Shnei Bote Dinim V'Ir Achas, Less One Bo. Says the Gemara that if you had two courts, if you had two Bote Din in one city, that would not be a problem. In other words, if you had two rabbinical courts in one town, in one city, and one of them followed the opinion of Beis Shammai, and the other followed the opinion of Beis Hillel, that would not be a problem of Lo Siskodedu. Why not? So it sounds like, it's a little unclear, but it seems that the reason for this is because in such a situation, it's accepted. In other words, if you have a Bezdin that says like this, and so within this Bezdin, it's accepted that this is the halakha. So this Bezdin established the halakha like Beis Shammai. a different Beis Din established the halacha like Beis Hillel. So therefore, even though you'll say that there's obviously a great deal of disagreement going on, you have the two courts, and this one says this, and this one says that, but it seems that if an entire Beis Din follows an opinion, then that opinion is established. So it's established. So this is already an established halacha. And you'll say, but what do you mean it's established halacha? The other court has follows a different way, and they have established a different halacha. So it seems that we're not so opposed to that. In other words, the main concern of Los Escotadu is that you have there's no unity at all. There's nothing. Nobody agrees on anything. But if you have this group has established the practice to be this way, and that group has established the practice to be that way, so then that's the Gemara comes out. That's not a problem of Jews breaking into groups. Another thing, this is a chiddush, a great chiddush. I don't think any of us would have assumed this. We would have said that the only time you avoid factionalism is when everybody is exactly on the same page. But the Gemara here says, no, it's not so. It doesn't have to be that way. Even if you have two different groups, but as long as this has been certified, or a rabbinical court has established that this is a correct practice, so then we can say, all right, there are different interpretations of the Torah. There's this, their interpretation, and their interpretation. That would be acceptable. The only time it would not be acceptable would be within one group, if there's one Beis Din, and they can't get together and all agree on anything, so that means that nothing has been established. It's just that if you ask him, he'll tell you to do this, and him will tell you to do that, that's no good. On the basis of this Gemara really rides the realities that we have today. Today we have Ashkenazim and Sfardim who follow very, very different halachas in many cases. We've seen over the course of the year different situations with halachas one way by Ashkenazim and other way by Sfardim. And the reason why that is not a problem, you say, well, so how do you have how do we allow this? I mean, here you have the people, and you could see, oftentimes you could see the differences. Okay, so how do we have that? The answer is because the Ashkenazic practice has been established and the Sephardic practice has been established. They've both been established by great Gedolim, credible people throughout the generations, and therefore, if it's been established that way, there is no issue of Los Escotadu in general. In other words, simply the fact that we have different groups is not a problem. You say, well, the Hasidim do this, the Hasidim don't sit in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, and then others do, right? Everyone else does. How do you explain that, right? So that's because it has been established, that there have been established practices, and therefore you have this practice and you have that practice. That's not the problem of Los Escotadu. The question that comes up is, in one shul, if you have people from both groups, is that a problem of Los Escotadu? In other words, given the reality, in other words, in North Miami Beach, we have Ashkenazim and we have Sfardim. There's no question about it. So now, and each one is allowed to follow their practices, because that is like Shnei Batei Dinim Birachas. That's not a problem Los Escotadu, because that's the Gemara telling us. The Gemara says that if you have two, if it's established in a rabbinical court a certain way, then that gives it credibility, and therefore, even though not everyone agrees and a different court disagrees, but each one is an established practice, and from established practices there is no problem. So therefore, the fact that we have living together in one community different practices, and you might see during the 3 weeks, it's going to be Shavuos v'Tammuz, not that long, and Ashkenazim will stop shaving, and Sfardim will not, and you'll say, well, here you have a clean-shaven person, and here you have a person who has allowed his beard to grow, and they're both living side by side. That's no problem. So the question now becomes, that what happens if, since everyone looks together, and now you're coming into a shul to daven, and in our communities, being that we have tremendous taruvos, being that we have a tremendous amount of mixtures, it's not like the old kehillas that used to exist in the various cities of Klal Yisrael, where in this community everybody did this, in this community everybody did that. We don't have that today. And not only that, but as we mentioned last week, today you have the reality that people daven in shuls even that do not follow their minhagim, but they daven in those shuls anyway out of matters for convenience they'll daven. A person has to get to work, this minyan works for me, so the person will go to that shul. So therefore, even though the shul does not follow his practice, he davens nusach Ashkenaz and this minyan davens nusach Sfarad. But that does not hold back people today, because being that we live in mixed groups and we have a lot of other cheshbonos, the person will say, this minyan works better for me. This minyan will get me to work on time and this minyan won't. This ma'ariv is a good time for me because I like to go to sleep early, and this ma'ariv is a good time for me because I like to go to sleep later, I get home late. So a lot of considerations go into it. So the question is, in such a setting, is there a problem at all? Is there a problem at all? So last week we saw, so Rav Moshe says, that one has to follow the minhag of the shul. The question is, what if the shul does not have a minhag? In other words, for example, tefillin on Chol Hamoed is not necessarily I don't know necessarily that shuls have an official position on that. Okay, there is no question that a Sephardic shul would have an opinion. Sephardim don't put on tefillin on Chol Hamoed. Okay, if you went to the Satmar Beis Medrash in Williamsburg, you would see nobody wears tefillin either, because they also, the Hasidim also follow the opinion of the Zohar that you don't put on tefillin on Chol Hamoed. However, Ashkenazim do, but within the Ashkenazi ranks there are different opinions, because within the community of Sephardim as a group don't put on tefillin. Ashkenazim, it depends who you are. If you come from a Hasidic family, then you put on then you don't put on tefillin. The regular opinion is you do put on tefillin. As such, within Ashkenazic shuls, there is not necessarily a minhag. There is not necessarily a minhag at all. I mean, I don't know. I don't know necessarily. I didn't do my homework to find out shuls here in our community whether there is a distinct minhag about this. Yeshivas have a minhag. That there is, generally speaking, yeshivas follow the Lithuanian tradition. Ashkenazic yeshivas follow the Lithuanian tradition, and as such, yeshivas, as a rule, put on the tefillin on Chol Hamoed, because that was the standard Ashkenazic minhag. Other than those who follow the Gaon Lagong or those who follow the Hasidim, the Baal Shem Tov, everybody else put on tefillin Chol Hamoed. So therefore, were one to daven in the yeshiva on Chol Hamoed, it would be a much bigger question not to put on tefillin than to go into a regular shul, because in a regular shul, there's just no minhag. There's just no minhag. So you'll say, but if there's no minhag, but look, it's the whole thing, this is bizarre. You have four people sitting next to each other in one row. This one has tefillin, and this one doesn't, and this one doesn't, and this one does. What kind of thing is that? So one could well make the case that in that situation there would be no issue of los tzodidu, and probably there would also not be an issue of machlokas, because there is no minhag in that place. There is no minhag in that place. So therefore, in the typical shuls, unless there is a minhag, it could be there, it could be in certain shuls, I don't know, you might want to ask, but if there is no minhag in the place, then simply saying that everybody should be uniform here, it sounds like in that situation there's a lot of room to be lenient. That there's a lot of room to be lenient because there is no minhag, period. There's no minhag. Whereas if the shul davens Ashkenaz, the same shul, when it comes to the nusach hatzvilah, that they have a minhag. We daven Ashkenaz. So for somebody to get up and say Kaddish and say V'yasmash B'chanei V'kar V'shichei, or for somebody at the end of the davening to say Baruch Hu Hashem Amvorach, which you see more and more these days, right? That's not the minhag in this shul. That's not the minhag. That's a Sephardic custom, or perhaps a Nusach Sephardic custom as well. But that, so for that, the shul has a practice. But in other areas, the shul may not have a practice at all, in which case, it's not, that is one situation. I just want to clarify that there, it probably is not such a big deal. In other words, to go into a local shul on Chol HaMoed and have the divergent practices, it would be better, it's always better if in one place one practice is followed, but being that they don't have such a minhag, then there is much more room to be lenient. Whereas in a place which has a distinct minhag, if you go into a Sephardic shul on Chol HaMoed, nobody's wearing tefillin. So if an Ashkenazi is going to walk in there and put on tefillin, that would be wrong. That would be wrong, and that would be worse, let's put it that way. And therefore, on that would be a situation of greater concern. But in a regular shul, that type of thing would not be such a concern. Now, so the question is, what about let's say where the shul does have a minhag? Like we said, the shul davens Ashkenaz. And Ashkenaz on Monday and Thursday, they say the long tachanun, and they say the long, the tefillas, the hurachim, and then they fall tachanun. Whereas the Sfardim and those Daven Nusuf Sfardim do it in the reverse. They begin with Takanun, they fall Nefilas Hakayim, and then they go ahead and say the Vahu Rabbim. So if you're in a shul which does not have your practice, what should you do in that situation? And similarly, it would also be a question where with the Ashamnu, a person who's going to do the Ashamnu, and Sfar does and Ashkenaz does not, what should you do? So last week we said that one must follow the practice of that shul, and that was the ruling of Rav Moshe Feinstein. However, I saw the last few days there was a volume of tshuvas from Rav Moshe Feinstein that was published posthumously. After he passed away in 1986, about 10 years later, the family released a final volume of tshuvas, which were almost all dated from the 1980s, the last years of his life, to 1982, 83, 84, he was still writing the last tshuvas. Some of them, according to what it says in the introduction, he already was losing his eyesight, and some of them he dictated to people, and they had to read it back to him. But he writes here, there is a tshuva, Nigus Moshe, where he says, where he softened his position a little bit, where he softened his position based on the following. Based on, if you turn to the second side of the first sheet, so we have, here is in Simon Lamed Aleph, in the Shulchan Aruch, is where we have the discussion of where it's filling on Chol HaMoed. So the in Sif Beis, the Mechaber paskins the Chol HaMoed, Gam Kein Osu Laniach Tefillin, that it is prohibited to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, and this obviously is the practice of the Sfarim. The Ramah continues, I'm just skipping a little bit, the Ramah says, V'hagav yesh omrim, that Chol HaMoed chayv b'tefillin. He says that there are others who say, the opinion of the Baalei Tosfos, that Chol HaMoed, one is obligated to put on tefillin, v'chein nagin b'chol glilus eilu, anichem b'moed u'varach alem. Okay, he says, and therefore the Ashkenazic practice is to put on tefillin Chol HaMoed. That is the standard Ashkenazic practice. Again, within the ranks of the Ashkenazim, not everybody does that because this was written before the Vilna Gaon, who passed the Halacha like the Mechaber, and it was also before the Baal Shem Tov, where the Hasidim changed and followed the opinion not to put on tefillin for the Kabbalistic reasons. So therefore you have here the two opinions. Now, it would seem, therefore, that this is according to the Ashkenazim, you're obligated to put on tefillin, and according to the Sfardim, you're obligated not to put on tefillin. So if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, three lines from the bottom of the page, the Mishnah Berurah says a very curious thing. The Mishnah Berurah says, O Kosvu Achronim, Achronim write further, the ein nachum shebeit hakneses achas sasam yanichu tefillin uksasam lo yanichu mishum lo siskodidu. That it is not proper that in one shul some people should put on tefillin chol HaMoed and other people should not put on tefillin. And the reason is because of Losis Dodos, because of this pasuk that prohibits Jews from breaking up into groups. So, in the Igros Moshe, one of the last tshuvas that Rav Moshe wrote, he has a question with this Mishnah Berurah. And he says he doesn't understand why does he phrase it in such a, what we would call, power of a way. Why does he say it? Ein nachon, it's not right, it's not nice that one shul, some people should do it this way and some people should do it that way. Why does he say ein nachon? He should say it's usur. The Shulchan Aruch should say, the Mishnah Berurah should say that it's usur in one shul for some people to do one way and some people to do a different way. Why does he say that it ain't nachon? Now, we just got finished saying that that might be that perhaps in a shul where there is no minhag is what he's referring to. However, Rav Moshe took it a step further, and Rav Moshe said that he wanted to take it extend it a little bit more, and he says that Tam Nira, I'm sorry, it's not on the sheet. He says that in his opinion, the reason why the Mishnah Berurah wrote it this way was because since it is established, each practice is established, and Jews live together, so therefore, by something that's established, then if that falls into the category of having two rabbinical courts in one place, even though everybody is davening in the same shul. In other words, even though you say, well, it's one shul, and in one shul you have two different practices, but on the other hand, each practice is a valid, halakhically established practice. And therefore, he says that being the case, it would not be a violation of the iser of the Torah of Los Eskodos. It would not be usser, but rather it's lo nachon. Lo nachon means it's not right, it's not the best thing to do. It would be better that everyone should be uniform. Because still, we don't like to have some doing one way and some doing the other way. But to say that it's usser, once it has been established and certified, Rav Moshe said, you cannot say it's usser. You say, lo nachon, it's not the best thing to do, but we cannot say it's usser. Riding on this way of thinking, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which I did not see before the shiur last week, but I'd like to thank Yisroel Mazarevsky, one of my talmidim here, pointed it out to me as soon as the shiur was over, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and also Yigodel L'Chaim, Rav Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, the great Gadol that we have today in Eretz Yisrael, both Paskin, and I couldn't find it in the Svarim that they wrote, but apparently there is a sefer that we have, several Svarim in Hilchos Tefillah that are available that we have today that are basically like anthologies of all the halachas of Tefillah, and in the sefer called Tefillah Kilchasa, and there's another sefer which came out more recently called Isha Yisrael. And in these Svarim, they quote Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Eliashiv as saying that if you are davening in Nusach Svar and you go into an Ashkenaz shul, and in the Ashkenaz shul they say on a Monday and Thursday Behu Rachum and then Tachanun, and you say in your way of saying it the other way, you're not obligated to follow them. You're not obligated to follow them. You could do it your own way. This is the psak of the more recent Gedolim. So, therefore, now, Rav Moshe Feinstein, I am convinced, and it's pretty clear in his other tshuvas, if you would ask him, he would say, no, you really shouldn't do that. You should say, right, you should daven the way they daven. But I just want to point out that that is not the only opinion out there. Last week I presented it as if this is the Taurus Moshe, as if this is the only Torah, and it is the Taurus Moshe of Feinstein, but it's not necessarily the Torah that's unanimously agreed upon, right? And therefore, we have the more lenient opinions of Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Eliashiv, who say that you could do it the other way if you wanted to. So therefore, we have Baruch Hashem within determining what constitutes a machlokas, and our desire to avoid a machlokas in a shul, we have a machlokas. how you avoid a machloket. So therefore, right, so as only we Jews could do. So therefore, it's unclear. It's unclear. In other words, these Gedolim Paskin we have from the Rosh Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashin, that they say that you could daven your own way even in a different shul. Why? Because it's an established practice. So a person who's sitting with you will understand. The person will say, oh, I understand. That's because he's smart. When he daven Zufa Svar. So I don't have a problem with that because he's davening in Arminian, but he himself does not have that minhag, and that's okay. So, in the opinion of Rav Moshe, there isn't a. I think it's very clear that he says that one should not do this. He makes it very clear that you should daven the nusach of the shul that you're in. But we have there. If there are those who are a little bit more lenient, and it was brought to my attention that Rav Adi Yosef should be well also is of that opinion. So even although I couldn't get to the bottom of it 100%, but it does seem that he also is of that opinion that if it's established a certain way, you have the right to follow it. So therefore, it's hard to say a bottom line. And Rav Moshe brings a raya from this Mishnah Berurah that the Mishnah Berurah himself seems to allow it because of the fact that he says about Tzvon Kol Moed, he says it's not right that there should be two different practices, and he doesn't say it is prohibited that there should be two different practices. However, the hardliners are still out there, right? It wasn't just Rav Moshe, there are others that, other Sfarim that say for the daughter of Neres Yisrael, Binyamin Zilber, who wrote the Shubas on the title Oz Nidru, who said very clearly not so, and they point to a different Mishnah Berurah, which seems to contradict the Mishnah Berurah by the Hilchos Tefillin. Okay, and that is, if you turn to page 3, so we have another place where there are divergent customs is the practice of saying Tachanun. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch says that one says the Tachanun, the Tefillah Tachayim, when one puts his head down on his arm, so it says that the Shulchan Aruch says that you should put your head on your left arm. The Ramah says on the second line, Hagobi Esh Omrim Biesh Mahatos Al Tzad Yamin. The Ramah says, no, you should rest your head on your right arm. And then the Ramah makes sort of a compromise and says that in the morning when you put on tefillin, so most people are right-handed, so therefore they're putting tefillin on their left hand. So as such, in the morning, one should fall tachanun on his right arm, and the rest, and by mincha, one should fall tachanun on his left arm. This is the ruling of the Ramah. So the Mishnah Berurah says, down below that there are different. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat and Vav, the Mishnah Berurah says the chayin das hataz among Avram she'ein l'shanas v'min atzeh. That one should follow the ruling of the Ramah, v'chein nagu olam, and this is the custom that people follow. And then he says, v'afilu l'hagra, and even according to the Vilna Gaon, the Sofer, the Ha'ikar, the Mechaber, the Tamid al-Smol, again, the Vilna Gaon paskins the halacha like the Sephardic practice, even though he was an Ashkenazi, but he followed, oftentimes went back to the sack of the Shulchan Aruch and said that one should put his arm on his left, like the Shulchan Aruch says. He says, nevertheless, if a person davens in a place where they follow the practice of the Ramah, mikol makom osur l'shanos mishum lo tiskodidu. So here the Mishnah Berurah says that if you're davening in a place where they follow the practice of the Ramah, then one cannot follow the practice of the Ramah. One cannot follow any other practice. Why? Because it's lo tiskodidu. So there are those who point to this and say that it seems from the Mishnah Berurah that he holds that this would be a violation of the Isra of lo tiskodidu. Meaning that you'll say, but what do you mean? But didn't we say that if it's established two different ways, it's not such a problem? So apparently here the Mishnah Berurah says that the fact that it's established two different ways alone is not enough. It's not enough. In other words, in one shul, it should be uniform. This is what the Mishnah Berurah says here. The other Mishnah Berurah that Rav Moshe Feinstein pointed to when the Hilchos Tefillin, so he wanted to say there it sounds like you could do that. That it's really everyone would be better. Everyone should do the same thing, but it's not an Isser. But it's not an Isser. And here it's Mashma from the Mishnah Berurah. It is an Isser. So therefore, you have all the opinions. So to summarize, if the shul has no practice at all, like Tefillin on Chol HaMoed in most shuls, so then it would come out that really you could do what you want. You could daven in such a shul because there is no practice at all. There's no minhag. There is no minhag in the shul whatsoever. It's 50-50 or roughly 50-50. And would it be better that the whole shul should daven one way? Yes. But nevertheless, you know, that the reality is that it's not so. In our shuls, living the way we live today, the post-Holocaust era where Jews have been resettled into countries and everybody is, you know, there's a big mixture of people. So there is no minhag in the shul. You can do whatever you want. If you daven in a place where they have a distinct minhag on Chol HaMoed, then you have to follow them. But if not, you can do whatever you want. That would not be a problem of Lo Tefillin. However, if you go into a place where they have a minhag, let's say the Nusach HaTzfilah, that they daven Ashkenaz, and the shul davens Ashkenaz, and you personally daven Sfarad, so here you have differences of opinion. The opinion of Moshe Feinstein is that you should follow the practice of the shul, even if it means changing from your custom, that you should say Tachanun the way they say Tachanun, that you should say it in the order that they say it. If they don't say the Ashamnu, you shouldn't say the Ashamnu. You could say the word Ashamnu Bagadnu, but you should not hit yourself in that manner. That was his opinion, that it has to be totally consistent with the practice of the shul. However, as I said before, you have a little more flexibility. The opinions of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Eliyashiv seem to be that since it's known, everybody knows why the person is doing it his way, and it's an established thing, and everyone knows, okay, this person is inspired, and therefore they have inspired, and that's his practice. So they see the way it's quoted over in their name, they seem to say that one could daven in his way, and one could say Bahurachim first and Tachanun second, or vice versa, depending. You could follow your own practice, even though the shul doesn't do that. So there are different opinions. It really would have to size up the situation. If you think that in this shul it's going to cause a problem, it could cause a machlokas if you don't do their way, then you definitely should follow the opinion of Moshe. I think the others would agree with that also. However, if it's more neutral, like the shuls that we have today, where it's sort of live and let live, and nobody gets so worked up about these things, and everybody's chilled out, so in a situation like that, there are different customs. It's hard to say. Rav Moshe's opinion was that you should follow still the minhag of the shul, and the others were a little bit more lenient. Now, the final thing I want to cover is, I would like to thank Shmuel Yeager, who came to me right after the share last week, and pointed out another area where this comes up, the divergent practices, which could lead to machlokas, and that is when we talk about shaking the wool on sukkahs. Now, shaking the wool on sukkahs, there are two areas of dispute. One area of dispute is brought in the poskim, and the second area of dispute is based on halacha versus kabbalah. As the first area, which is discussed in the poskim, is when exactly do you shake the wool? So there are those who shake the wool when you say, we know, when you say, Hovu Hashem Kitoki Wool Chasto, you shake the wool. When you say, On Hashem Hashina, you shake the wool. About that there is no question. Everybody agrees to that. The question is, but the Hovu Hashem Kitoki Wool Chasto, that part of Hallel, there are four lines. There's Hovu Hashem Kitoki, Yomrna Beisaron, Yomrna Yisrael. There are the four lines. When do you shake the wool? So there are those who hold that you shake the lulav, which is really the Sephardic practice, I believe, and the Nusach Sephardic practice, that you shake the lulav only by the first two lines, by Hod Hashem Kitov Kilom Chasto and by Yomrna Beis Aaron Shilom Chasto, the second line, Yomrna Yisrael Kilom Chasto, the second line. Those two lines is when people shake the wool. Others have the practice that they shake the wool by all four lines. So now here you have a situation where we all know here, you know, it can get a little annoying. You know, the person next to you is shaking away the wuluf, and the chazan is shaking the wuluf, and you're not shaking the wuluf. So what do you do in a situation like that? And here the shul presumably has a minhag, right? The shul, whoever they send up to daven, the shul has a minhag. Pretty much every shul would have a minhag on something like that. The other area about shaking the wuluf, which could really cause problems, is which direction do you shake the wuluf in? So here we have a difference between what's brought in the poskim and what's brought in the Kabbalah. The psak that most shuls follow, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, is that a person basically keeps turning to the right. A person not supposed to turn his body, he's supposed to always stay facing the Mizrach, but the direction of the wuluf is always supposed to go to the right, to the right of wherever you were. So therefore, you go to the front, and then you move to the right, and then you go to the right of that, and to the right of that, and so forth, and then you go up and down at the end. That is the Ashkenazic practice. The Kabbalistic practice is different, and I cannot represent it well, although I've had situations where I did it myself, but they go a different way. Now here, you could really have an issue because you could have people bumping into each other, right? The guy, you disqualified my wool, because you know, you stuck out your wool, I stuck out my wool in the same direction, and therefore now it's split on the top, and I spent 5 hours picking out this wool. So here again, one would think that there should be an issue of you know, maybe there could be the machlokas or not. So it's very interesting that there is a psak of the Aruch HaShulchan, that the Aruch HaShulchan says that, he says, in the last, it's on page 4, the last 5 lines on the page, he says, it's actually before that, about the last 8 lines on the page, he says, the year of leave, the im echad rotsa shalol in aneas, the kohat tzibur arashus biyodo. The Rav HaShulchan says, it seems to me that if a person wants to deviate from the way the tzibur shakes the lulav, he is allowed. The ein bezeh mishum lo seskodidu. And this would not be a problem of breaking into factions. Why not? So he says, v'raya mi mishnah, that we could prove this from a mishnah mesecha sukkah, because the Mishnah, which is printed on the top of the page, the Mishnah says, if you look on the top, so the Mishnah says, "V'heichlan hayu minanin," when did they shake the lulav? So the Mishnah says, "V'holdu Hashem tefila b'sof," they would shake the lulav when they said "Holdu Hashem tefila" at the beginning and at the end of Hallel. "Uba'an Hashem Hoshiana divrei beitilo," and also by "An Hashem Hoshiana beishamay omrim afan Hashem atzlichana," that we don't follow, right? So by "Holdu Hashem" and "An Hashem Hoshiana." So then the Mishnah concludes by saying, "Amri b'Akiva sofa hayisi b'Rebbe Gamliel b'Rebbe Yeshua," I saw with my own eyes Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Yeshua, "Shekol ha'am hayu minanin es lulveihem," that everybody would shake their lulavim, "V'heim lo nenu ela ba'an Hashem Hoshiana," that they did not shake the lul by holding Hashem Kitov at all. That these Gedolim, these Tanoim, Rebbe Gamliel, Rebbe Yeshua, they only shook the wool of Bayan Hashem Hashiach. Now why is that? So he doesn't say. But the Aruch HaShulchan says that you see already that even, in other words, Rebbe Akiva is apparently, the way that Aruch HaShulchan understands it, Rebbe Akiva is saying that even though the practice was that people shook the wool of Bayhogu Hashem Kitel Kilom Chasa, like we do, but yet, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Yeshua refrain from doing that. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that it's mashma from the Mishnah, the way he interprets it, is that Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua are at the same minyan as everybody else, and they did not shake the wool together with everybody else. So he says, the Aruch HaShulchan, "Dimaya Shaykh Bezel, Losus Kodu, Hayosim Ken." He said that if this would be an issue of Losis Godadu, how would they be allowed to deviate from the tzibur? So he says, "Elevadai, it must be the Kivan Shein Zechov Gomor Yogalasos Kafi Hanirlo." That since the way we shake the wool is not a total chiyuv, Because even though one is supposed to shake the lulav, but nevertheless, exactly the way it's supposed to be shaken is not the same level of chiyuv as the mitzvah. The basic mitzvah of the arba minim is to hold the four minim, right? But we say that it's also you're supposed to shake it as well. That's also a mitzvah to shake the lulav. But exactly how and when and which way, that is not a chov gomer. And therefore he says that you see from this Mishnah that something which isn't really a total chiyuv, it's not a practice that if you have a good reason, you're the last to be a nirulo. Right? That a person could do the way it seems fit to him. So therefore, it would seem based on this that when it comes to pointed Aruch HaShulchan, when it comes to shaking the lulav, even he has a proof from this Mishnah that even if in the shul they shake the lulav a certain way, so you don't necessarily have to do it that way. Now, granted, the Aruch HaShulchan is saying this in terms of how frequently you shake the lulav. He was not commenting here on the direction in which you shake the lulav, which is more noticeable. That is more noticeable and a type of thing that would more get under a person's skin, that I'm shaking the lulav one way and he's shaking the lulav a different way. However, it could be, it's unclear, it could be that the reason would hold there too. That because essentially this is not a total chiyuv. In other words, even though it's discussed in the Poskim, it's discussed in the Gemara, but it was not discussed as a chiyuv that you have. This is like, it's preferred that it should be done this way, but it's not like you're obligated to do it this way, and if you don't do it this way, you're not yotzei. So here we have the opinions of the Aruch HaShulchan that one could be lenient in such a thing. Now what the ramifications of this to other situations, you say, well now you have to start thinking if something is a chiyuv or it's not a chiyuv, but at least it's hard to know. I will tell you that I spent hours and hours trying to get to the bottom of this, and it's very, very difficult because you have so many different opinions and no two people see it the same way. But the fact is that when it comes to, at least we can take Aruch HaShulchan for what he says when it comes to shaking the lulav. That when it comes to shaking the lulav, he has a kula that if you're in a shul where they shake the lulav a certain way and you don't want to shake as frequently as they do, so he says that in his opinion that would be allowed. I would guess that if you asked Moshe Feinstein the exact same question, he would not agree with this, and he would say that you have to do it the way the shul does it, and the proof that it brings from the Mishnah, he might answer by saying that who says they were at a minyan with other people, maybe this was their own minyan and they had their own students there and everybody followed their practice. So at the end of it all, I think the way it comes out is that I think in the opinion of Rav Moshe, one really should follow always the practice of the shul in every area and with the practice of the minyan, and even though you're Sfard and they're davening Ashkenaz or you're Ashkenaz and they're davening Sfard, you should do it their way, and in his opinion you should daven their way and their nusach, except for the Salam Shemon Esrei. The Salam Shemon Esrei you could do yourself, but you can say your own way. But other than that, his opinion is that you should follow strictly the practice of the shul. You should follow strictly the practice of the shul. From this tshuva that I read earlier, it sounds like he softened it a little bit at the end of his life, that he came down a little bit and said that it wouldn't be the worst thing. It wouldn't be lo sisko to do, but there is testimony from his son, one of my chaverim from my days in yeshiva, Baruch Moskowitz, who put out a sefer this year quoting many Piskei Halacha from Rav David Feinstein, the son of Rav Moshe, says that he was told that Rav Moshe, he himself had the practice not to put on stone kol moed, he followed the custom of the Gra, but yet all the years that he served as Rosh Hashiva in his yeshiva, he put on tefillin when he came to the yeshiva's minyan because of the fact that he felt that this is the way it has to be done, and that really a person should follow the practice of the place that you're in. So this is the tzak of Rav Moshe. Those who are lenient, the reason I came back with this today was because if you see someone in a shul who deviates from the practice, you can't say he's 100% wrong. You can't say, because the liberal, the more lenient opinions of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Eliashiv seem to allow it based on the fact that it's established. That it's established and everybody knows about it, and because we live in a big tarubus, we live in a big mishmash, so therefore everybody will understand, and there's no problem with what it's going to do, and apparently they hold there's no problem with my focus either. So therefore, it sounds like the preferred thing would be to conform. If a person has a very hard time conforming to the minute of the shul, and this is the way I've always done it, so okay, there are those that one could rely upon. As I say, you could rely upon the opinions of Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Eliyashiv. At the end of it all, I would just like to end this and end the shiurim from the year with a quote from the Gemara here on this topic. The Gemara, at the end of the discussion of Los Sotos, who says an amazing thing. The Gemara says that even though Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had many differences in halacha, they had many differences in halacha and different things, and one of them pertained to a certain type of marriage, which it comes up in the laws of Yibum, something, a situation called the Tzaras Erva, where there's a big dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether a person is allowed to marry such a person, allowed to do Yibum to such a person or not. And the ramifications are great in such a situation. It could be a ramification of mamzerim, that according to one, it's a prohibited marriage, the children would be mamzerim. So the Gemara says the following thing. The Gemara says that even though, afal pisha nechuku beis shammai beis hillel, even though they disputed so many points of halacha, even those that pertain to marriages, and the ramifications could be very great, says the Gemara, nevertheless, well, nimnu beis shammai milisa nashim beis hillel, v'lo beis hillel mi beis shammai. Nevertheless, they did not refrain from intermarriage. The Beis Shammai would still marry Beis Hillel's people, and Beis Hillel would still marry Beis Shammai's people, even though there was a potential of a serious conflict in halacha. Now, how were they able to do that? So the Mefarshim explained, because they kept fresh, they kept records. They said, okay, this family, this person is a question, so this person we can't marry. But anybody else, we could marry. In other words, the fact that they had different opinions did not lead them to stand off completely, but rather they did the best they could to live in peace despite their divergent practices. And the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, "L'kayim ha'shenemar ha'emes va'shalom ehavu," that they loved emes, but they loved shalom also. In other words, it's not always easy to, when you in the pursuit of halacha. So a lot of times, the reason why there's been so much machlokas in halacha in shuls, you say this one says halacha this way, and this one says halacha that way. It comes from a good thing. It stems from a good source. It's because of the pursuit of emes. Because we hold this is right. The Ashkenazim hold this. The Sfaradim hold this. The Hasidim hold this. So each one is passionate about his beliefs. You can't have, we can't be upset about that. That's a very good thing. That comes from a midah of emes. But at the same time, the Chazal say that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel set a very good example that not only did they love emes, but they also loved shalom. They also loved shalom. They did not compromise the even in their pursuit of emes, they balanced it out with the pursuit of shalom. So therefore, in all of these areas in halacha, the overall has to be, as much as we live in probably unprecedented situations because of the great taruvus, because of the fact that there are no communities anymore like they used to be, that we have one rav and everyone follows the tzak halacha for five generations. The rabbanim in this town have said that's the way it was in Europe, that's the way it probably was in the Sephardic countries as well. Today we don't have that, because today everybody lives together. So therefore, there's a lot of room for divergent practices. There's a lot of room for machlokas and for in the pursuit of emes. But nevertheless, the Chazal tell us over here that a person, despite his great drive for emes, has to also balance it out with the great drive for shalom. And that was the example that was set by Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And that is something that whatever we do, whether you follow Rav Moshe Tzak or Rav Shlomo Zalman's Tzak, whatever it is, but the fact is that it should always be in the context of the pursuit of not only emes, but also the pursuit of shalom.